Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Thanks for downloading our podcast, Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries. Our mission is to teach you what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money. You see, in the Bible, you will come across 2,500 verses that deal specifically God's plan for us on how we are to handle the treasures He's given us. And we teach these biblical principles in our small group Bible study called Faith and Money Matters. You can learn more by going to CompassCatholic.org. Just click on Books and Studies and take a look at Faith and Money Matters. My name is Steve Holbrook, and with me are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. One of the areas of concern for parents, college students, and especially college graduates is the repayment of their student loan. And today, we have a special guest who deals with student loans on a daily basis, and she's about to share some very valuable information. Evelyn?
So, our guest today is Victoria Sechrist, and your two passions are faith and finances, correct?
Yes, I have other passions, but those are two of them.
Two of the big ones. And I know you work as a financial coach full-time, correct?
Yes, I work for the Financial Gym, which is headquartered in New York City. I'm a quote-unquote financial trainer. We use that because we're a financial gym, so instead of saying financial planner, we say financial trainer.
Okay, and our topic today is how to pay back those student loans.
Victoria, I think sometimes the student loan balances seem like they're huge mountains for students or former students to climb. And where should people start when they want to look at paying off their loans?
Well, this is going to sound really obvious, but the first thing is to figure out your actual student loan balance. So some people might graduate and then maybe a couple years after graduation, they're making monthly payments. They haven't actually checked their student loan balance. And so it can be a surprise when they check it to see that perhaps their loan balance is actually bigger than when they graduated school. The other thing is it might be less than what you expected. So I think the first thing is to face the light and find out your actual balance. The other really important thing to know is whether you have federal student loans, private student loans, or a combination of the two, because that affects your repayment options.
If I've been afraid to look at my loan balance, is that the way most people react?
Yes, some people do ignore it, and obviously that can actually make you more stressed than knowing what the actual number is. I've seen people just feel relieved at knowing what the number is, because instead of guessing, they know, okay, this is it. This is what I have to do. I do think that it can be easy, though, to fall into the practice of not looking at your student loan balance. And just, even if people who fall into default and so they haven't made payments in a really long time, they're hoping that, you know, it moves into collections and then it'll fall off their credit report. for federal loans, the government can come after you for your student loan debt your entire life. So even if it's fallen off your credit report, they can still come after you to get the money that you owe. So maybe you feel that by ignoring it, it's just going to go away, but that's really not the case.
Well, a lot of people handle their credit cards like that, too. They just hope it'll go away and disappear, and they won't have to face up to it.
There are consequences that can come along with that. For example, wage garnishment. So you could potentially have your wages garnished if you're not making student loan payments. And when that happens, then I think most people think, okay, now I really have to get on board with this because I'm taking home less money every week now.
So does it make a difference if the loan is a private loan or a federal loan? I'm sure there are differences between those two. How does that affect the interest bearing on it and the payments and all that kind of stuff?
Quite a few differences between federal versus private. So I'll start with federal loans. So federal loans, they're going to be serviced through something called Fed Loan Servicing or Great Lakes. But that's one of your providers, and that's a good way to know if it's a federal loan. There is a website, and the link is kind of cumbersome, so I'll give you guys the URL to post to find out if you, in fact, do have federal loans. It would be listed on this national website. But basically, with federal loans is you have an interest rate that's probably, it's usually in a range between 3.4 to 6.8 for undergraduate loans. That's typically what you're going to see for federal student loans. The major difference between the two is that federal student loans offer you something called income-driven repayment. So that means a monthly payment that is based upon your actual income. So part of what you do is you verify what your income is for this past year, and then your federal student loan monthly payment is adjusted to reflect something that is affordable given your income. Private student loans don't have that option. They don't care how much money you make or don't make. They are going to tell you this is how much you need to pay every month to pay off these loans in whatever the repayment period is, whether it's 10 years, 15 years, 20, 25 years. The private loans basically have a little less flexibility than the federal loans. Federal loans also offer deferment and forbearance. So those are two options where you can get the ability to pause payments. So there's little differences between the two, but essentially the idea is if you're in a tough spot and you can't make those loan payments for whether it's a couple months or a year, for example, you can defer or go into forbearance and then kind of give yourself almost a little bit of increased cash flow by not having to pay those. Private student loans typically don't have the same type of deferment and forbearance options. Some private student loan providers, and there's many, many, many of them, will offer potentially a forbearance period if, say, you lost your job. So this is not a given. You can't just assume with whatever private loan servicer you're with that they're just going to offer you forbearance if you lose your job. So it's something to keep in mind that, you know, you especially emergency funds are great, but especially if you have private student loans, if you were to lose your job, you might not have the option of pausing your private student loan payments. And so you want to know that you can cover those. Otherwise, you default on them, they go into collections, and it's just not a fun cycle. So the biggest difference really between those is the repayment options. But the other thing is with private student loans right now is because the interest rate, the Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates several times in the last year, private student loan rates often now are lower than what you'll get with federal student loans. So if you go on a website like Student Loan Hero, for example, that's a really good website, I think, for everyone to know about. They can give you some different repayment options on private student loans. They'll compare different rates for you. And you'll see rates that are, you know, a fixed repayment rate of 3% or 2.5%, which is amazing. You're not going to get a 2.5% fixed rate on federal student loans right now.
But so, those rates start when you take out the loan, not when you start paying back the loan, right? So if you signed the loan 10 years ago, that rate is your rate no matter what the current rate is, correct?
Well, yeah. So that's where if you wanted to refinance them and and refinance basically for the goal of having a lower interest rate, you could do that.
So are there any rules around refinancing? Like, do you have to meet certain criteria in order to finance them?
Yeah, so to refinance personal student loans, private student loans, you're going to want to have a decent credit score. Typically, I would say to get the most competitive rates, you're going to want to have above a 700 credit score. You're also, for refinancing, typically it makes sense if you already have private students. So let's say you went to college, you took out private student loans. Now you've been out of college for a few years and you notice that the current student loan, private student loans, have a much lower interest rate. So now you want to refinance. Super easy to do that when you already have private student loans because you're not losing any sort of benefits that you would if you went from federal student loans to private. If you already have private student loans, I suggest that everyone look into refinancing because if you can lower your interest rate, why not?
Well, that's always a good idea, right? Now, when someone takes out a student loan, and forgive me, I haven't had a kid in college for ages, does the student take out the loan or does the parent take out the loan or does the student take it out and the parent co-signs? How does that work now?
It actually depends on whether it is federal or private. Usually private student loans are co-signed. So you're going to have your parents co-sign with you to get that. Federal student loans are typically in the student's name. There have been types of loans called Parent Plus loans, but with most federal loans, it's just in the student's name.
So if I'm a student and I'm not paying back my loan, I'm affecting my parents' credit score since they co-signed, correct?
So if you have private student loans and you're not paying them back and they go into default, then yes, that's going to also affect your parents' credit score.
Which I would think your parents would not be very happy about.
Correct. And you know what? It also happens the other way, too. So some students have an agreement with their parents that the parents are going to pay back a certain amount per month, and then the student will pay back a certain amount per month. And then the parents, if they don't make the payment, too, that could also negatively affect the young adult's credit score.
Interesting. So you mentioned something earlier that I want to go back to. You were talking about forbearance and deferment. What is the difference between those two things?
So with deferment, we're really talking mainly the main cases where deferment happens are like when you go back to school, for example. So I think a lot of people are probably familiar with when, say, you got your undergrad degree and then you want to go back to grad school. Well, usually if you have federal loans, your loans will go into what's called deferment because now you're back in school, so you're not making money and you're not going to be able to really make payments. So in the case of federal student loans with deferment, if you have subsidized federal student loans, then your loan balance is not going to grow while it's in deferment. If you have unsubsidized federal student loans, the balance will grow because interest is going to accrue. So basically the thing to know is, do I have subsidized federal student loans or unsubsidized? And really what that means, the subsidized student loans means that while you're in school, the government covers interest on that loan. So you're not having to actually pay anything, but by the same token, it's not accruing interest while you're in school. So you come out of school owing the same amount of money as you did when you went in. Then with unsubsidized federal student loans, if you're in deferment for those, the interest is going to accrue on those. So at the end, when you graduate, or when you finish, you know, your grad degree or your PhD program, then your balance is going to be bigger than it was when you started. Those are actually both cases of deferment, but depending on whether you have unsubsidized or subsidized student loans. So that's another thing to know, whether they're subsidized or unsubsidized. Forbearance, it's much easier to, quote-unquote, qualify for it. You don't have to be back in school. It could be that you're facing economic hardship. It could be that you lost your job. There's a lot of different reasons, and very easy to apply for forbearance. But basically, you're asking the government, can you just give me, you know, X amount of time where I don't have to make any payments? And what happens with forbearance is your loans will accrue interest. You're not required to make any payments. But then at the end of the forbearance period, any interest that accrued during that time is capitalized. And what that means is that is, it's then added to the principal balance. So now you're, so let's say, and I'm just going to do really easy numbers here. This is not really how it would work. Let's say your loan balance when you started grad school was $10,000. Let's say it was $10,000 and you lost your job. So you apply for forbearance, you get forbearance for a year, and you don't make payments for an entire year. Well, let's say at the end of the forbearance period, you had accrued $1,000 of interest. And you didn't make any payments during the time, because during forbearance, you are able to make interest-only payments if you want to, but you're not required to. So let's say at the end of that forbearance period, you accrued $1,000 of interest. Well, now that $1,000 is going to be tacked on to the $10,000 as principal and not as interest. So now your principal balance is higher. So that can be one of the downfalls of forbearance, something people should know, that it increases your principal balance.
Well, that makes sense. If you didn't pay the interest, you need to pay back the interest plus interest.
It's got to get added in somehow.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Well, the difference is more so that it's capitalized, meaning if it just stayed as $1,000 of interest and your principal stayed at $10,000, then interest moving forward would be based off of your principal balance, the $10,000. But since with forbearance, they add on that interest as part of your principal balance, you're now moving forward, your interest is charged at principal balance of $11,000. There's a distinction between whether the interest at the end of the period is capitalized and added to the principal balance versus just being separate and just still counted as interest.
I guess that you still have the potential to have multiple loans. Does it make sense to try to consolidate all of these into just one loan as opposed to having two or three loans that you have to make payments on?
So this is my favorite answer. It depends. Typically, you're going to see when you have federal loans that you might have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different loans. And in that case, it's very easy to consolidate them in the federal loan system. So consolidation can literally, you can apply for it. It could take about 30 minutes. And basically what they do is they mush all those loans into one. And then they come up with one new interest rate. And typically what it is a weighted average of all the interest rates from the loans that comprise the new loan. I often recommend that people do that. It's easy to consolidate, and then you just are dealing with one loan, one interest rate. With the private student loan, typically you're not having multiple, like, miniature private student loans. Usually it's one student loan with a big balance. There's no reason to really consolidate unless you have, you know, multiple private student loans that are miniature and you want to just make it easier on yourself and just have one monthly payment.
So if we consolidate the loans and it's the average of the interest rates of the various loans, and that interest rate comes out to be 5 or 6%, you indicated earlier that rates today could be as low as 2.5 to 3%. Would it make sense then, after the loans are consolidated, to refinance them to obtain that lower interest rate?
It really does depend, because if you refinance that new consolidated federal loan into a private loan, then you're giving up all of the benefits of federal loans, which is, for example, if you're on the path to public service loan forgiveness, the PSLF program, you know, you definitely don't want to refinance, because if they become private loans, you're not eligible anymore for that program. The other thing is no more income-based repayment. So you might have $100,000 in federal student loans, and maybe based on the income-based repayment program you're on, you're only paying $300 a month, but then you switch over to private, and given all the different repayment options, you might pay $700 a month. And you actually might not be able to afford that difference, even though the interest rate is actually lower. Because the thing with private student loans is they're setting you up to actually pay off that loan at some point. With federal student loans, you could get a monthly payment that could literally be $0, because the government's determined that based on your income, you can afford $0 towards your student loans. And so you're not set up to really ever pay the loans off in that example. And you could also be paying, for example, you're someone who has like $400,000 in student loans and you're paying $900 a month. That $900 payment is not even hitting principal every month. That balance is just going to keep growing and growing. But the thing with federal student loans is there is always the potential of new legislation. And so right now, the law stands that if you're on an income-based repayment program for 20 years for undergraduate loans, you make all your payments, you will have your balance forgiven after those 20 years. For grad school loans, it's 25 years. You might say, okay, I'm fine with having 20 years of repaying my student loans because I know it'll be forgiven in 20 years. But as the law stands right now, at that 20-year mark when your balance is forgiven, you then have to pay taxes on the forgiven balance. That can result in a really, really big, tax payment for a lot of people. For example, if you have $400,000 of student loans due and they get forgiven, you're probably going to owe at least $100,000 on that forgiven balance just from standpoint of income tax. That's something people have to be aware of, where it might seem like, oh, great, I'm on income-based repayment, but someday that's going to come to a head. Now, the thing is that Congress could put together legislation, and there actually is some pending legislation that would remove that kind of tax bond, as it's called, so that after the 20 years, after you've made your 20 years of income-based repayments, your forgiven amount then wouldn't be taxed. But no one knows exactly what's going to happen. I mean, we're in an election year, so it's hard to tell. But the one thing that is guaranteed is that if you do refinance from federal to private, then you are going to lose those federal protections of just general forbearance if you need it, income-based repayment, and then potential loan forgiveness.
These tax laws and the various changes to the regulations, are these all part of the Future Act that was just signed, or is that something totally different?
Those are different. So the Future Act is really just, it affects students by making the FAFSA easier to fill out, but also it is allowing the IRS and the Department of Ed to communicate with each other to basically make it easier to verify your income so that you're on the correct income-based repayment plan. The law that affects the forgiveness for student loans after 20 years of income-based repayment, that happened about like 10 years ago. So there actually has not been, no one has been on the program long enough to see if what happens after that 20-year period when they get their loan, forgiven, and then they have to make a major tax payment on it.
You mentioned several times the number $400,000 for a student loan balance. Is that common? That's an awful lot of money.
It's not that uncommon given people who go to get a PhD or a doctoral program or a law degree. And the reason, and I've worked with people who have that amount of student loan debt, what happens is they may not graduate with that much student loan debt. They might have graduated with $250,000, which is still a lot. But then by virtue of being on income-based repayment and making monthly payments that don't even hit principal, their balance just grows every single month.
Boy, that's frightening.
It is. It's really frightening. And if you think about it, so someone who might have graduated with $200,000 in student loans, which, it's more common, I think, than people realize. So say you have $200,000, but you're making your income-based repayment. By the time, you've paid into it for 20 years, your balance is probably going to be well above $200,000, even though you've been making payments for 20 years, because those payments didn't actually hit principal. And that's typically what happens on income-based repayment.
Victoria, with the passing of the SECURE Act in December, the law was changed, which now will permit people to pay off some types or some amounts of student loans through their 529 plan. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So now the law went into effect January 1st, and you can use up to $10,000 per year from a 529 to pay back student loans. This might beg the question, if they had 529 money, why didn't they just use it to go to school in the first place and not get student loans? So I'll be interested to see how many people actually benefit from this, but this could be a really good option for families who, say, have multiple children in college, and when the children graduate, they find that they didn't use all the 529 money and are now able to help their kids pay back some of their student loans.
Are there circumstances where the federal government will excuse your student loan or forgive your student loan?
Yes. So the public service loan forgiveness, that is one of the most popular plans. There's also, whether it's 20 years after income-based repayment for undergrad loans, 25 years of income-based repayment for grad loans, that amount can be forgiven. But then, like we talked about, you have to pay taxes on the forgiven amount. There's also forgiveness for if you're totally and permanently disabled, your loans can be forgiven. And then actually, not to be morbid, but if you pass away, your federal loans will be forgiven by the federal government. And there are a couple other instances. There's a couple other types of forgiveness programs out there. So, like, there's some for nurses, for example. So there's some other smaller programs for forgiveness, and it might not forgive your total balance, but there are other options if you want to look into them.
Victoria, I want to throw in a question or two. Can you get a student loan that you've defaulted on out of default?
Yes. So you can get your federal student loans, you can get out of default through a process called loan rehabilitation. Basically, what this does is it gets you back in contact with your student loan servicer. You agree to 9 monthly on-time payments of a certain amount. They will determine what you can afford. Then once you've made those 9 monthly on-time payments, they will then basically make your student loans active, like in good standing, and you're no longer in default. But that's just for federal loans.
Can I deduct the interest on my student loans from my tax form?
Yeah, so there is a student loan interest tax deduction. It's currently $2,500.
We thank you. We're out of time, and we really appreciate your time this afternoon. And our listeners can plug into your blogs. You're going to have a series of 5 blogs on the Compass Catholic website, more about student loan payoffs. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Wow. Talk about a ton of information to be shared. Our plan is to have Victoria back on the show so she can guide you through the student loan process when applying. Now, Victoria has written a number of blogs on the topic of repayment of your student loan, and you will find all of those blogs that she has written on our website, compasscatholic.org. Also, if you would like to share the show with anyone that you know that is in the process of paying back their student loans, there may be some information within today's show that can greatly help them save some money and some time. So please let them know the show is available. Again, go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down to the homepage, and click on podcast. And if you have any comments or feedback about today's show or topic, we would love to hear from you. Plus, if you have a suggestion, maybe there's a topic you would like to hear us discuss, just send us an email with your comments, your suggestions. That email address is info@compasscatholic.org. That's info@compasscatholic.org. For John and Evelyn Bean, thank you so much for listening. Remember, we have a brand new podcast for you each and every Wednesday morning. Simply go to compasscatholic.org. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're from Compass Catholic Ministries.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at Ave Maria Press. Use code JP2 Teachings. That's JP II Teachings. to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.